Welcome to the Eucharist Podcast with Wyoming Catholic College, responding to the call for Eucharistic renewal by sharing wisdom in God's country. I'm Jeremy Holmes, Academic Dean at Wyoming Catholic College.
And I'm Kyle Washit, its President, and welcome to this episode.
Kyle is on the road this week. I find myself more or less alone in the office as the college settles down to the serious business of finishing out the last days of Lent, wrapping up the classes that need to happen before we all take a break from academic work for the great Triduum and the Paschal Mystery of our Lord. I thought this week we could focus in on a particular moment in the Mass, right before the liturgy in which we receive communion, we recite the Lord's Prayer, and this is true across the rites of the Church. This has been true from the very earliest days, as early as the Didache in the early 2nd century AD. Every record we find of the Church's liturgy, the Lord's Prayer has been prayed at this moment. And that makes sense for a couple of reasons. One is because it has the moment of reconciliation built in. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And this fits with the Lord's admonition that you should, if you find that you are not reconciled with your brother, you need to leave your gift on the altar and go be reconciled first. So before we approach the Eucharist, we need to pray this prayer of reconciliation. But there's also the phrase, give us this day our daily bread. And Christians have never been able to help hearing this in relation to the Eucharist. And I want to focus in on that line because it has an interesting and rather strange word. So the Lord's Prayer is found in the New Testament in both in Matthew's Gospel and in Luke's Gospel with slight variations. Both Gospels have this line, give us this day our daily bread. And in both Gospels, the Greek word used for daily is epiousios. Epiousios. Now in the Vulgate, the Latin translation of the scriptures that was used in the Western Church for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, epiousios in Luke's Gospel is translated as quotidianum, which means daily. But epiousios in Matthew's Gospel is translated as supersubstantialem, supersubstantial. Give us this day our supersubstantial bread. So what gives with this word epiousios? The Vulgate can't seem to make up its mind. Well, this word is unique to the Gospels. It appears nowhere else in all of Greek literature until it is introduced in the Lord's Prayer. Now, depending on how you explain the etymology of the word, it seems to come from epi and ousios. It could mean necessary for existence, or it could mean necessary for the current day, or for the coming or the following day, right? But if we take it just very literally, epi means above or super, and ousios seems to mean the substance of a thing, substantial. So super substantial is also just a literal take on this mysterious word. Now, what do we do with this word? What are we to make of this strange word, and how are we to pray this word in the context of the Mass? The petition of the Our Father, give us this day our daily bread, is one of about 10 different contexts in which Matthew's Gospel uses the word bread. There are about 21 occurrences, if I recall, of the word bread in his Gospel over 10 different contexts. Now, a couple of those contexts, bread is just bread. Clearly just bread in the context of an argument about ceremonial laws. There are also a couple of metaphorical uses of the term bread, where we're clearly not talking about literal bread. But most of the occurrences of the word bread in Matthew's gospel have to do with the Passover, right? The manna that Israel received in the wilderness. So let's go back to that story of the manna and to make sure we've got the background necessary for hearing the word bread in Matthew's gospel. We get the story in Exodus 16. The people need food. God sends down this mysterious substance that the people have never experienced before that settles like dew on the ground. And when they see it, they say, "Ma-na," in Hebrew. Ma-na, which is where we get the word manna, but ma-na in Hebrew literally means what it or what is it, right? So manna means something like what's it? What is it? It's this mysterious substance. And the people were told to gather only enough for one day. And in fact, if anyone tried to gather enough for 2 days, his extra provisions would rot. But before the Sabbath, they were told to gather enough for 2 days. And for the Sabbath, the manna would stay fresh, right? So that you could gather more than one day in preparation for the Sabbath, and the provisions would not rot. So, and this way, they were taught that the spiritual good of obedience was more important than the physical good of bread. God is going to provide them with food each day so long as they obey his word. And in Deuteronomy chapter 6, Moses, standing on the edge of the promised land, speaking to Israel, reminds them of this experience of the manna in the wilderness, and he draws the lesson, and he says this: man does not live by bread alone, but by every word which proceeds from the mouth of God. Okay? Now, later Jewish thought about the manna describes it as, in the Psalms, as the grain of heaven and the bread of angels, or the bread from heaven. The Book of Wisdom describes it as food from heaven. And the author of Wisdom describes it as providing every pleasure and suited to every taste. Right? Non-canonical Jewish literature before Christ speaks of the bread of angels as what Adam and Eve ate in paradise, or what God's elect will eat in the messianic banquet at the end of time, or as a life-giving food produced in heaven by and for celestial beings, right? So Jewish thought at the time of Christ saw the manna as something more than physical food. It's a supernatural food with supernatural properties suitable for consumption by supernatural beings, right? And you can hear some echoes of this tradition in St. Paul's first letter to the Corinthians there in chapter 10. He writes this: "I want you to know, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud, and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same supernatural food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the supernatural rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ." Now, St. Paul seems to be lining up the experience of Israel in the Passover with the experience of Christians in the sacraments of initiation. So, just as the Israelites traveled under the cloud, and under that cloud they passed through the sea, so Christians go through the waters of baptism and receive the Holy Spirit, right? And just as Israel ate the manna in the wilderness and drank the water from the rock, so Christians eat the Eucharist and they drink the blood of Christ. So St. Paul is taking this line of thought about manna as a kind of supernatural food, and he's wrapping it around to the Christian Eucharist. Definitely a supernatural food. So let's jump back into Matthew's use of the word bread in various contexts. And I think this trip back through the theme of manna is going to be helpful. So the first context in which we encounter bread in Matthew's gospel is the temptation of Christ in the desert. And as you recall, Satan tells him, if you are the Son of God, turn these stones into bread. Now, in context, what has happened? In context, Jesus, as an infant, went down into Egypt, and then he came out of Egypt. Then we get to the story of the baptism of Christ, and then he is led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tested. So in context, Jesus has just enacted a blow-by-blow of Israel's experience. Israel went down into Egypt, was enslaved there, came out of Egypt in the Passover, passed through the Red Sea, corresponding to Christ's baptism, and then went out into the desert where God tested them. And when Satan tells him, turn these stones into bread, Christ responds by quoting the very line from Deuteronomy in which Moses drew the lesson of the manna, right? The lesson of the supernatural bread. And it was, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word which proceeds from the mouth of God. Right? So this is a Passover manna moment here. The next context in which we find the bread in Matthew's gospel is, in fact, in the Lord's Prayer, right? Give us this day our daily bread. And again, later in the Sermon on the Mount, which of you, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone, right? But then after that, the major context for bread in Matthew's gospel are the feeding of the crowds in chapter 14 and in chapter 15, right? And these have explicit Passover themes. And those Passover themes are perhaps most explicit in the parallel story in John 6, right? And these are about people of Israel who are out in the wilderness, and God provides, supernaturally provides bread for them. All right, because they are hungry, right? Now, the phrasing of these stories also looks forward to the Last Supper, because as Jesus is about to offer them the bread, it says he took the bread, he broke it, and looking up to heaven, he prayed, this phrasing that is going to be repeated at the Last Supper. Now, the Last Supper, of course, is itself a Passover meal, looking back to the experience of Israel in the Passover. And it is interesting there that Christ, although he himself is the Passover lamb, right, he doesn't take the lamb as the matter for his new sacrament of the Eucharist, but rather he takes up the bread. And so we have this combination of the reference to the Passover lamb in the context and with Christ and looking forward to the cross, but also we're bringing in the idea of the manna and a connection to bread. So there's great evidence in Matthew's gospel for seeing the reference to bread in the Sermon on the Mount as a manna reference, because Matthew develops bread in relationship to the Passover and manna throughout his gospel. Now, if we take it that way, what do we get? Well, on the one hand, we get a bread that was intended to teach the Israelites to depend on God day by day, not to have stored up for the next day, but to depend on him today. Not, God, give me a 3-day supply so I don't have to depend on you tomorrow and the next day, but give me today exactly what I need today, and I will live in obedience to you. But on the other hand, in the manna, we also find this tradition of speculating on the nature of this supernatural food, the bread of angels, the bread of heaven, the bread of and for celestial beings. And these two ideas converge in the direction that St. Paul takes it, and in the direction that the Last Supper takes it. They converge in the Eucharist. They converge in that bread which is our daily sustenance, but also our supernatural food, our epiousios, food, to use the Greek word from the Our Father. And this really brings out the nature of the Eucharist, especially here in these days of Lent, right? These days when we find ourselves reliving the time of Israel in the desert, joining Christ in the wilderness, fasting with him, sort of experiencing that testing in preparation for the great Easter baptism. And during this time, we find ourselves depending in a day-by-day way on this sacrament, this manna, this, what is it, this epiousion arton.
Thank you for listening to the Eucharistic Podcast at Wyoming Catholic College. To learn more about Wyoming Catholic College, visit wyomingcatholic.edu.